We live in a culture of never enough, right? You're never good enough, you're never perfect enough, you're never thin enough, you're never powerful enough, you never have enough protein, you're never successful enough, you're never hydrated enough, you're never smart enough, you're never certain enough, you're never safe enough, you're never extraordinary enough. Amen? And in that kind of culture, it can be hard to try new things and to take risks, like go to the border, right, Peter? Or to try something without being assured of success. So I want to tell us, we're going to have expressions of vulnerability this morning, and the first one I want to, is about a person who did not plan on the life that he has. He did not plan on being an activist, he wanted to be a writer. Indeed, he admits that rather than talking to people, what he most wanted to do was be behind his keyboard on the typing away on the keys. But a handful of years ago, he had just come back from Bangladesh, where he was doing some reporting on dengue fever, which is a mosquito-borne disease that is spreading like wildfire in Asia, because mosquitoes really love the warm, wet climate that is kind of everywhere now. And while he was there, of course, he got bit by the wrong kind of mosquito, and he developed dengue, which is kind of like, I remember my fellow Peace Corps volunteers, it's sort of like arthritis. It just like freezes your bones. It's really painful. But because he was healthy and well-fed, he did not die. But he went to the hospital, and there he saw rooms and rooms of people who were just devastated by the disease of dengue fever. And as he saw that, he thought, how unfair is this? Because when you look at some of the biggest burners of fossil fuels, Bangladesh, like hardly anybody has a car. And most people are not plugged into the electric grid. And when he saw all of these people, like there were just rooms and rooms of people, it kind of broke him open. It broke his heart open. So when he got home after recovering, this writer, this Methodist Sunday school teacher, this person who would rather be typing on his laptop, knew that writing would not be enough in this never enough culture. So he called up his writer friends and he said, "Let's go to our capital city and we'll sit on the steps with our signs and we'll point at how unfair climate change is on people like the people I saw in Bangladesh, and we'll get arrested and we'll get written up in the paper." And they said, "That's a great idea." So he called the police chief and he said, "We're gonna do this, you know, what's gonna happen?" And the police chief just said, "You guys can stay there as long as you want. I mean, we're not gonna arrest you. You can, you know, hang your signs, do whatever." Which was disappointing to this man. So this man and his writing friends decided to walk, and they walked from their town all across the state. And because the state was small, they could do it. They did it in 5 days. And they got 1,000 people to join them. And they met with politicians and professors and scientists and artists. And the next day, the man opened the newspaper and he talks that it was the saddest, one of the saddest days of his life next to Bangladesh. Because there in the headline, it said that his protest in response to climate change of 1,000 people was the largest that the country had ever seen. 1,000 people, which told him how much work that he had to do and how unsure of success that he was and how vulnerable he was going to have to be as he set about making a movement that we know is 350.org. Who am I talking about? Bill McKibben, who inspired the science marches all over the country yesterday. We have a song for the earth.
The speaks to me. If I have the heart to listen to her, from her rivers, I learn avenues to move on, to let go with grace. From her
Brené Brown, who gave us our opening words and gave us a wonderful TED Talk that every person ought to watch on YouTube on a theme of vulnerability. It's just terrific. It's the best 20 minutes you'll spend aside from a sermon. Brené says that she hates vulnerability. I define vulnerability, she says, as uncertain risk and emotional exposure. I hate uncertainty, she says. I hate not knowing. I hate emotional exposure. I really hate vulnerability. I have had my own wrestling matches with vulnerability, and despite those, a month ago, I shared on WBUR, which is our NPR station here in Boston, an essay that some of you may have read, many of you did read, about losing my brother Nicholas from an opiate overdose over a year and a half ago, which I have talked about here and there in worship with you. But until that essay, I hadn't really shared how that loss has informed my ministry with you. Namely, how in parish ministry, it is so easy to think how I have the answers, and you're the ones that come looking for them. And sort of the architecture of the space allows us to think that, right? Because there's the pulpit where I would normally stand, often stand, I'm higher up than you. All of you are in pews that are uncomfortable and meant to look at the person in front. I'm dressed differently than you are. This robe and this stole, and I have a reverend in front of my name. All building toward the presumption that I speak with incredible clarity and conviction. But that after Nick died, I don't think that I told you how full of doubt that I was. And in the essay I asked, should I have prayed more? Not really sure what prayer means to me even now. Should I have prayed more? Never mind the sermons that I give that says that the universe doesn't work that way. It's not quid pro quo. And then I was wondering, how come I didn't know how bad things had gotten for him? Never mind that I called him all the time, he in St. Louis, me in here, and that he was a master at hiding his addiction from everyone, including his family and maybe even himself. And then I asked, why couldn't I save him? Never mind that the powers of salvation were not included in my MDiv degree from Boston University, or that addiction is a disease. And then, of course, why did God let this happen? I still ask that at night. Never mind that you've heard me give many sermons in all my years here that I don't believe God decrees who lives or dies. I don't believe in that kind of a God for reasons that none of us have, which is why the phrase, everything happens for a reason, drives me so crazy. Now, the part of me, like Brené, that hates vulnerability would rather just preach about Earth Day today. Because we live in a culture where it is so easy to hide. And so tempting to talk about things that are more pleasant. And we live in suburbs where it's even easier because it looks as though from the scenery that everybody is doing just great, doesn't it? Which is why so often we feel so alone in our hurt. I promised my mom, literally the day after that he died, that I was going to use my role, my public role, to be as open as I possibly could about this issue of addiction and opiate usage. Nick, who hurt his back, went on pills, and it's the story you've all heard. It hasn't been easy to do that, but when I tell you that my vocation with you makes me better than I am, and I tell you that you don't ask me to pretend, means that you allow me this space as your minister to be vulnerable enough to risk all of that open-hearted hurt. At a recent worship meeting, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, we were talking about vulnerability and how all of us hated it. And we were talking about addiction. And one of us, I can't remember who it was, had mentioned this song by, of all people, Trent Reznor of the Nine Inch Nails. This song called Hurt was made famous when Johnny Cash covered it right before his death. Johnny Cash, who struggled his entire life with addiction. This song that Al's gonna sing speaks openly, directly, and painfully to the emotions that I know that Nick had, and I know that many others tell me you have in your families around this issue. This song pulls, my friends, no punches, but it is important to hear.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle tears a hole, that old familiar sting. Try to kill it all away, but I remember everything. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down, I will leave you hurt. I wear this crown of thorns upon my liar's chair, full of broken thoughts my mind cannot repair. Beneath the stains of time, the feeling disappears. You are someone else, and I am still right here. What have I become? My sweetest friend, everyone I know goes away in the end. And you could have it all, my empire of dirt. I will let you down, I will leave you hurt. If I could start again, a million miles away, I would still take me, I would find a way.
For our last expression of vulnerability, I found myself thinking this week of the hymn, Amazing Grace, written, as I think we know, I hope you know, by John Newton 300 years ago, written actually in a village that's just 5 miles away from where my wife grew up in England. And the hymn is about his very slow conversion experience from being the captain of slave trading ships to eventually becoming a village vicar, who apparently in his day was incredibly popular for the ways that he spoke plainly and directly to his congregation about his own sin and his longing for redemption. Because normally the clergy kept a distance up in the high pulpit, but he would go down on the floor and tell his people what was going on and how he had failed and how he had tried to be redeemed. He finished nearly every sermon with this line, "I am here to break a hard heart and to heal a broken one." This week I'm thinking of especially this song as it relates to our own denomination. Now, you may not know that we actually belong to a denomination. We are, those of you seeking an unorganized religion, actually have a lot of, you know, organization. Our denomination of 1,000 congregations in North America and Canada is in a very vulnerable place these last few weeks. And it's resulted in the resignation of our president, who's elected. His name is Peter Morales, and two other top staff members over hiring practices that have resulted in very little racial diversity in our association. So one statistic that brought this home for me was that this is at the UUA, which is in the tech district of South Boston. It's a beautiful building. 83% of the service workers at our headquarters are people of color. 86% of the people in management and positions of leadership are white. What's also true about our denomination is that there are precious few ministers of color among our 3,000 ministers. And this, despite the fact that we talk about diversity and we hang Black Lives Matter banners from our congregations, many of us do. You're asking, why does this matter to me? Why do we care about what happens at a headquarters that we probably will never visit? What does that have to do with my own vulnerability, you're asking? And my answer to us and to myself is this. We come here to this beloved community that, by the way, is not honestly reflective of our diversity in our communities, because we are so very homogenous racially. We come here to practice how to become the people we want and need to be. In other words, we don't come here as a fully formed finishing product, like, oh, we're so great, we go to church. Like, we come because we're broken, at least I am. And we need help to heal a broken heart and to break open a hard heart. We need help. Now, the temptation, at least in me, and I'm thinking it must be in you too, is to think that, oh, we're so progressive and we're so forward-thinking and we're so well-intentioned, and we are in many ways, that all of the work in the world that needs to happen is outside and not in here. Does that feel real to you? But the definition of vulnerability, as Brené tells us, is uncertain risk and emotional exposure. And because of that definition, what I'm thinking of is that our denomination's turmoil right now about race and class, but especially about race, tells me that I need to be vulnerable enough to not get defensive and instead ask, how come it is true that people who look like me, a white man, cisgender, which is a new phrase, means, you know, I identify as a man, how come people who look like me get into positions of leadership so much easier than people who are brown and black? Why is that? Why is that? So next Sunday, our whole association is inviting congregations like ours to talk together after worship about just about all of this stuff, which, by the way, we are doing, we've been doing, we need to do, because privilege, the definition of privilege is means that we don't have to think about our privilege. So we get to opt into conversations like this, whereas people who, for example, look like my adopted sister, who's from Vietnam, doesn't get to opt into that, because everyone sees her as a person of a different race. I'm asking you on bended knee to engage hard conversations with me. To engage hard conversations with me and with our thousands of members across the country. Because we need each other. We desperately need each other to break open our hearts. And if places like this, which by the way is known as one of the healthiest, most vibrant congregations in New England, by the way, if we have an opportunity to be leaders here. So I ask you to join me. Join me. And you know what? The thing is that we do not do this work alone. We have the people next to you in the pews, and we have the grace that, which is an unearned gift, is what the word means, beneath us and above us and around us, which is why I ask us to sing us out with this terrific song written 300 years ago, Amazing Grace. 205 in our hymnals. Friends, above all else, I want you to know that you are loved and lovable. You will learn this from this congregation's words and actions. The lessons of love are in how we treat ourselves and each other. We want you to engage with the world from a place of worthiness. We will practice courage in this community by showing up, by letting ourselves be seen in all of the light and the shadow, and honoring vulnerability. We will share our stories of struggle and strength and joy and light. Because if we can't do it here, where else possibly can we?